So we have a few new people here today. This meeting is designed for us to look at the instructions in this textbook on how I can have a power in my life that will help me overcome a hopeless condition of mind and body. And we study the book in detail and see how I can apply it in my life. And we started with the cover. And this is our 10th time through the book on Saturday. We started this meeting almost 9.5 years ago. Today, we're going to pick up where we left off last week on page 14, but I'm going to read page 13 again so we can put it all in perspective. And I hope to finish Bill's story today. Bill's story is so important. It's a story of hope. It's a story of someone who has the disease I have. What happened to him? The first 8 pages of it describe his downfall from his alcoholism and where he admits complete defeat. Then the next section is where God sends Abby Thatcher to him so we don't have to die today. The third part is where Bill and Abby are arguing about the concept of God. Bill didn't like it, and he chooses God is his own conception of God. He takes the steps in Towns Hospital. And now we're going to look at what happened to Bill and essentially to us after he took the steps. But before, I'm going to read on page 13. You can listen to the last podcast. I go into it in great detail. But this is where he was separated from alcohol. Now, this is November 1934. And then he lived to 1971, and so he stayed sober. And at the hospital, I was separated from alcohol for the last time. Treatment seemed wise, for I showed signs of delirium tremens. And here's where he takes the steps. There I humbly offered myself to God as I then understood him, to do with me as he would. I placed myself unreservedly under his care and direction, step 2 and 3. I admitted for the first time that of myself I was nothing, that without him I am lost. I ruthlessly faced my sins, steps 4 and 5, and became willing to have my newfound friend take them away root and branch, steps 6 and 7. I've not had a drink since. My schoolmate, this was Abby Thatcher, visited me, and I fully acquainted him with my problems and deficiencies. We made a list of people I'd hurt or toward whom I felt resentment. I expressed my entire willingness to approach these individuals, admitting my wrong, steps 8 and 9. Never was I to be critical of them. I was to write all such matters to the utmost of my ability. I was to test my thinking by the new God consciousness within. That was a new word that they put in the book last week. It's the God consciousness within. God's already within, inside of me. And now I'm a conscious to that power. I'm awakened to the spirit. We said we have a spiritual awakening or spiritual experience as the result of the steps. I'm awake that there's a power already inside of me that can solve all my problems. Common sense would thus become uncommon sense. I was to sit quietly when in doubt, asking only for direction and strength to meet my problems as he would have me. Never was I to pray for myself, except as my requests bore my usefulness to others. Then only might I expect to receive, but that would be in great measure. Powerful paragraphs. And here's the promise. My friend promised when these things were done, I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator, that I would have the elements of a way of living which answered all my problem. So by getting a relationship with my Creator, I have an elements of a way of living which solves all my problems. Belief in the power of God, plus enough willingness, honesty, and humility to establish and maintain the new order of things were the central requirements. So if I want to have this new relationship with God, which gives me a way of living which answers all my problems, the requirements is that I need enough willingness, honesty, and humility to establish and maintain the new order of things. And they're essential. We talk about that a lot. Then he says, simple but not easy. It's a simple program, but it's not easy. A price had to be paid. It meant destruction of self-centeredness. Wow, So how do I do that? The steps. The steps are how I destroy my self-centeredness. And really, I was listening to Sandy Beach this morning. My self-centeredness is destroyed when I'm in the now. When I'm in the present moment, there is no ego. There's no past or future. I'm only in the now with God. And that's the world of the spirit. And so I want to stay in the present moment. I don't want to be into my self-centeredness. My self-centeredness is the future, fear of the future, and anger at the past. And it says, I must turn in all things to the Father of light, who presides over us all. Now, they use the word turn several times in the big book, and it's a very powerful image. We tend to say, well, it just means turn. But I'm turning away from myself, my thinking, what I want to God. And now we'll pick it up. These were revolutionary and drastic proposals, but the moment I fully accepted them, the effect was electric. That means we let go of our old ideas. We earnestly seek this with all our command, remember? We have accepted them. And there was a sense of victory, and I said, victory over what? Over his self-centeredness, over his alcoholism. Followed by such a peace and serenity as I had never known. Now I want to contrast this paragraph when we read page 15, because there's a real message in the comparisons. So he had a peace and serenity I'd never known. I never had peace and serenity my whole life, moments of it, but then my underlying fear would always give me a sense of uneasy, and they would be short-lived. And I would have peace and serenity based on what happened outside and not inside of me. And so I was looking for the external world to get peace and serenity, and it's never enough. There was utter confidence. I felt lifted up as though a great clean wind of a mountaintop blew through and through. God comes to most men gradually, but his impact on me was sudden and profound. Now, we read the promises at a lot of the meetings, and it says, God suddenly did for me what I could not do for myself, right? We realized God could do for me what I could not do for myself. Well, your experience can be profound and sudden like this, but no matter when it happens, you suddenly realize that God is doing for you what you cannot do for yourself. And I have these spiritual moments all the time. I had one today when I was listening to this talk. God spoke to me through this message, and I saw things that I'd never seen before. For a moment, I was alarmed and called my friend the doctor to ask if I was still sane. He listened in wonder as I talked. If you read the internet, a lot of people don't like AA. It's very threatening because it relies on a power greater than us. They scoff at this, what we just read, and they say Bill W. was having DTs and he saw this vision and that's all this was. Well, people who wake up from DTs don't go to their doctor and ask if they're still sane on what they're thinking. He listened in wonder as I talked. Finally, he shook his head, saying, something has happened to you I don't understand, but you had better hang on to it. Anything is better than the way you were. The good doctor now sees many men who have had such experiences. He knows they are real. Notice the word real. It's very important because this book is only the experience of the first 100 men and women. It's their experience, and it was real to them. So I can believe what they say. It's their experience. I don't have to like it or agree with it, but I know this is true. This is their experience. And how do I know it's true? Well, we see what they did and what happened to them. And they're real. So here's the thing. Bill W.'s dying of alcoholism. He's sitting in his kitchen in November 1934, dying. This friend calls him and he says, great, I have enough booze to drink with him all day. And Ebby comes in and says he's sober, he has a religious idea and a program of action. Then Bill's deciding if that's something he needs when he's dying. And then he argues with Ebby about God, whether God could be real to him. Then he decides that he'll let go of the conception of God as he understands him, and he'll agree with that. And once he does that and he's willing to believe, he changes. And then he goes to the hospital, and he takes the actions that we talked about right here, we just read. And so he was a self-centered person his whole life. He only worried about himself and what was going to happen to him. And then look at the lines. Now, he's in the hospital. He's had this spiritual experience. And the thought came that there were thousands of hopeless alcoholics who might be glad to have what had been so freely with me. You see how God has changed this man? He went in self-centered, only thinking about himself. And now he's already thinking about who he can help. Now, Joe and Charlie used the analogy a lot of Saul on the Damascus Road as an example of the change in Bill W. that he had in the hospital. Bill changed. Something came to him and changed him. And they talk about Saul on the Damascus Road. He was not a really good person. He was a hateful man, and how he was struck down. And God got his attention and said, I want you to change. I want you to do these things. And then you'll become Paul. And he became one of the greatest examples of spirituality that we've seen in the world. And the same thing happened to Bill W. He wasn't some perfect person, but something changed him, the power of God. And then we're going to see how he used this power in the next few pages. And there are thousands of hopeless alcoholics who might be glad. Notice that, who might be glad, they're dying. Don't we see this all the time at AA? People are hopeless alcoholics, and they come in here, and they might do this. They might read the book. They might work the steps. And then be glad to have what had been so freely given to me, and then perhaps I could help some of them. And not, he knew he couldn't help all of them. He understood the disease, but maybe some of them he could help, and that's what we see here. A lot of people come to AA, and they don't work the steps, and they don't stay. They in turn might work with others. So he already saw how this could be given and transmitted, and how we might have a solution to this hopeless condition of mind and body. Now here's some powerful paragraphs. My friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. Remember, he came from the Oxford group, which was a group of people trying to practice fundamental Christianity before it was written down. How would people live if they were in the time of Jesus and had seen Jesus? And what principles would they practice in all my affairs? So what are the principles in all my affairs? Well, to me, they're the opposite of my character defects. You know, love, patience, tolerance, kindness, consideration, compassion, forgiveness, all the things we talk about at the meetings, the characteristics of God. And it's essentially the St. Francis prayer. What am I bringing? How can I be a channel of God's peace? Faith without works was dead. We talk about that a lot. It comes from James. If I have true faith, which is knowledge of God, and I trust God, then I will do his works, right? And if I do the works and take the work to go from belief to trust, then I'll have faith. So it's a circular path. And the more I do the work, the more trust and faith I have in God, the more I want to continue to do it. Now, if I stop doing the work, then I'll stop having my faith because I'll be back in self. And how appallingly true for the alcoholic. Now, here's a line that they use several times in the book. It's a warning. And it's why I think people who come for a while don't stay and make it. If an alcoholic fails to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he cannot survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. And we talk in the big book, it says on page 84 and 85, where we're in the 10th step, that we have a daily reprieve from our alcoholism based on maintaining a fit spiritual condition. And if I'm in a fit spiritual condition in my relationship with God, then I will react sanely and normally towards alcohol, and I will recoil from it as from a hot flame. So if I don't continue to enlarge my spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, I'm going to get back into self. I'm going to lose my conscious contact with God. If he did not work, he would surely drink again, and if he drank, he would surely die. And we know that's true. Then your faith would be dead indeed. Exactly. With us, it is just like that. So here, he's had this change. He's seen these what he needs to do, And then he and his wife abandoned themselves with utter enthusiasm to the idea of helping other alcoholics to a solution. Now, I remember when before Bill W. went in the hospital, he knew what was wrong with him. The doctor told him he had an allergy to the body. Once he put alcohol in his body, he could not stop. The doctor said, "You're an alcoholic. You have an obsession of the mind that whenever you're irritable, restless, and discontent, you're going to seek the ease of alcohol. You have no power to resist that." And he knew that, but he didn't know the solution, and he didn't have a program of action. And Ebby brought him the solution, and Ebby brought the Oxford Group steps, which we later made into our 12 steps. So he had all three components. He was the first person to have all three components. And when he put them together, he had a solution for his alcoholism, a solution of their problems. It was fortunate, for my old business associates remained skeptical for a year and a half, during which I found little work. I was not too well at the time. Now look at this. He's had the spiritual experience. He's sensed God is like a mountaintop came in the room, right? And everything sets at peace. He's an alcoholic, right? But he still has alcoholism. And look what it says. I was not too well at the time. I was plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment. See, we have to work the steps constantly. This was sometimes nearly drove me back to drink. But I soon found that when other measures failed, work with another alcoholic would save the day. Now, why is that? Why would working with another alcoholic save my day when I'm full of self-pity and resentment? Because if I turn my thoughts away from me to helping others, I'm out of self. And if I'm a service to God and others, I can't be in self-pity and self-centeredness. And there's the word again. We turn to help someone else. Many times I've gone to my old hospital in despair. And here's another powerful idea. When talking to a man there, he writes, "I would be amazingly lifted up and set on my feet." So talking to the man, look what it did to him. It may not help the man at all, but amazingly lifted him up and set him on my feet. It lifted him out of his self-centeredness and put him on the right path. See, that's the value we get from working with others. We hope we help the other person, but we really help ourselves so much. I saw that today. I did quite a bit of work with sponsees this week, and I got so much out of it. I don't know what they got out of it, but I got a lot out of it. I felt a lot better. I could sense a change. And it is a design for living that works in rough going. And that's really the definition of the 12 steps. These are a design for living that works in rough going. We commence to make many fast friends, and fellowship has grown up among us, of which it is a wonderful thing to feel a part. Now here's another idea that has changed. The fellowship grew up around the people who worked the steps together. And then they incorporated new people into this fellowship of the Spirit of people who had worked the steps, who had a relationship with God, and then they brought new people into that. Now we have a fellowship where it's different. We have people come in, it's a bigger group, it's a whole different society and way of life. But in that time, it was different. And the joy of living we really have, even under pressure and difficulty, we talk about that a lot. We have a joy of living, which we didn't have before, even under pressure and difficulty. I've seen hundreds of families set their feet in the path that really goes somewhere. I like the words you use. They're on a path that goes somewhere. And remember, rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path to God. And they were in a path that went somewhere rather than going off in all these other directions. And where was it going? Towards a spiritual life together. We've seen the most impossible domestic situations righted, feuds and bitterness of all sorts wiped out. I've seen men come out of asylums and resume a vital place in the lives of their families and communities. We've seen that here. Business and professional men have regained their standing. I can look around the room and see people who have experienced these things. There is scarcely any form of trouble and misery which has not been overcome among us. That's a pretty good promise. In one Western city, its environs, there are 1,000 of us and our families. I think they were exaggerating. The Western city they were talking about was Cleveland. And they did have a group there, and they had about... Well, it was a different world, and it was Cleveland, and I think that group had 100, maybe 100 people, And in Akron, they had maybe 40 people. There's probably as many people in this room now that were sober when the big book was written. There were only about 40 to 70 people. It's not that big today, but there were only 40 or 70 people, maybe 75 people. And yet, look at what happened. There are 2.5 million people in recovery in the United States. We meet frequently, and look at this, so that newcomers may find the fellowship they seek. Now we have some new people here. I hope you find the fellowship you seek in this room. I hope we offer a fellowship that newcomers would seek, because we want to be attractive to the newcomer. I've heard the newcomer is the most important person every meeting. I don't know, that's not in the big book. But we want to have an attractive example of the message for newcomers when they come in. So if they seek this, they'll see it. We want them to be able to see the message when they come here. At these informal gatherings, may often see from 50 to 200 people. Bill was he's a salesman. He wanted to exaggerate a little bit. We'll forgive him. Now here's the next line that I saw a new word in the book. It said, we are growing in numbers, and look at the next word, power. Look at that. We have a power in this room. There's a power in this fellowship. And the power of this fellowship is that we have a solution and we can help the person who's new find the power. And we're going to talk about that on the next page, that powerful page 17. So we offer a solution and we have power in here. That a new person, I hope you feel the power today. We have a power to help you. And then he writes, an alcoholic in his cups. I looked up cups. I couldn't find the definition in modern terms, but I think it's someone who's drinking and is an unlovely creature. That's a nice way of putting it. Our struggles with them are variously strenuous, comic, and tragic. One poor chap committed suicide in his home. Now here's another line that's throughout the big book. He could not or would not see our way of life. Who cannot and will not see our way of life? Who is it? Are you one of those? Well, the big book says there are those who cannot and will not give themselves to the simple program. They are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. And so what does that mean? I always wondered, what does that mean? Well, I didn't write the book, but I'll just tell you what it means for me today. It means people who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves are people who cannot see their hopeless condition of mind and body. They cannot see the truth about their life. Somebody said they can't see the reality of their situation. They can't see that that there's no way out of the way they're living on their own. Now, I heard something else today, this week, that made a lot of sense, that we people in this room, everybody who got here, had a moment of complete humility in which they understood that they were defeated, and then the grace of God could come in. I like the way that's put. We're humbled by our disease. None of us really surrender. We don't wake up one day and say, I've had enough of this. We are surrendered and defeated, and then we become humble. And when we become humble, then we're able to receive the grace of God. And I thought that made a lot of sense. And he said, now he ends this. There is, however, a vast amount of fun about it all. I suppose some would be shocked at our seeming worldliness and levity. I mean, if you came here today, we're all joking around. Before the meeting, most people giving me a lot of crap, but that's okay. But just underneath there is deadly earnestness, deadly earnestness. It says, with all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough. This is a fatal disease. We have a memorial service next Wednesday night for one of our members here who didn't make it, who killed himself and couldn't, his alcoholism defeated him. And so we have to remember, we joke around a lot, we're happy here, but this is a fatal disease. People die from this. And this is the only solution I know. Now, there may be other solutions to my problem, but this is the solution that works for me. That's why I believe so strongly in this book and following the directions. Faith has to work 24 hours a day in and through us, or we perish. Now, he's talking about faith in and through us, the fellowship, together. We have to be an example of how the faith is working. We have to be able to be an example through our service to others, and then our faith is revealed. And it says, or we perish. Most of us feel we need look no further for utopia. Utopia was the perfect place. We have it with us right here now. We have it right here now. And notice the word now. If we're in the now, we have everything we need right now. Each day, my friend, simple talk in our kitchen multiplies itself in the widening circle of peace on earth and goodwill to men. Wow, isn't that something? And then here's the most powerful thing of the whole story. It says, Bill W., co-founder of AA, died January 24th, 1971. He lived 36 years, and he constantly couldn't help but spread the message. And so it's very powerful. I don't know about you guys, but I get a lot out of this. And then I wrote, we have the power together. And and the other thing is, he couldn't stop giving this away. There's something happened to him in that hospital. And some people call it the Big Bang, where something happened to this man that he couldn't stop from telling people about the solution. And remember, he went 6 months till he met Dr. Bob. And when he went to Akron, he had finally gotten a job, and he was going to put together a business and be a big shot again. And he was going to be the top man for this corporation. And he went there in Akron with the Firestone. It was going to be a subsidiary of the tire business. And Bill was starting to get a little bit away from God and into self. And he went to that meeting, and it fell through. And remember, he was in this hotel. He didn't have money to pay the bill. The deal had fell through. And he was thinking that he'd go in the bar and hear some gay laughter. That's alcoholic bullshit. He thought that he could find some companionship in there. Well, you know what was happening? Bill was down. He had lost something. He had set himself up for something. He was in self-pity, and he went in there. And then it says, as he walked through the doorway, he stopped, and a sudden thought came into his mind that he should go find another alcoholic to work with. Now, who put that thought in his mind? Alcoholics don't get those thoughts. That was God. God said, Bill, don't go in that bar. Find someone else. And then he found Dr. Bob, and he met him, and now we're here today. Think about that. So anyway, it's very powerful. We'll open it up, and next week we're going to read the most important page of the big book, but I say that every week, so I guess I've used it up. Thanks anyway. Thanks for coming. Bye.